Welcome to another Mike M's, and in this one we're going to talk about books that were purchased at Baltimore Comic Con 2016. Just like I talked about in a previous episode, I like to go to Tomorrow's Treasures and select books from there, and I probably bought the most books that I've ever bought at a con. Maybe not the most, but the most expensive books that I've ever bought at a comic convention. And sometimes you just have to cut loose because you don't want to have regrets. Like, oh man, I should have bought that, especially when it was $500 cheaper. So for this one, I'm just going to talk about the issues that I bought from there that were Flash. All of these, I would say, are fine condition, with the exception of maybe two that are in VG. So we got Flash number 149. This particular issue has a bunch of kids, well, teenagers, and maybe an adult, in front of a TV set, and Barry Allen is unmasking himself. And one of the guys is saying, "Jumpin' Jets, the Flash is revealing his secret identity to the world," featuring the Flash Sensational Risk, co-starring Kid Flash. So that is pretty cool. Another book is Flash 150, and this one has an awesome cover because it has my favorite rogue in the entire world, Captain Cold. I love it, and I love this one. Looks like he actually catches Flash midstream, but Flash is able to break the ice. And it says, "Ha! My cold gun blast has frozen Flash to the spot!" And then you have Flash breaking free. It says, "While I leave my image behind, I'll super speed around Captain Cold and clot him." Featuring Captain Cold's Polar Perils. So this is 150. And one of my favorite rogues, it's from Gardner Fox and Carmen Infantino, and the same one, the same issue before 149 is John Broom and Gardner Fox. So, and that's from 1965. So I've already accomplished my Fat Flash goal of every DC comic since 1973. I'm going deeper. So this one has a really cool villain that's become an iconic villain for Starman, and that is the Shade. And this one has a Jay Garrick cover. It's 151, also written by Gardner Fox and drawn by Carmen Infantino. And it has Flash like trying to go punch the Shade, but he's got like a Shade shield, and he says, Flash says, "Not even my super speed can penetrate the dark barrier that's protecting the Shade and imprisoning my fellow Flash." And like I said, he has the Jay Garrick Flash imprisoned. Next up, we have, that I bought, a really nice copy. This one might be very fine. This is 157. I really wish I would have just cut loose and filled in all the damn holes. This is another villain that I hold close to my heart just because I have told you the story of how I got into comics. My dad used to take me to the dump. You know, I never had money to buy comics, but the drugstores would rip the cover off and throw away the books. They're perfectly readable, and they'd usually be in boxes so they wouldn't get full of garbage. But this one has the Top, and he's always been one of my favorites. I even remember the Top dying. This is 157, and it is by Gardner Fox and Henry Boltnoff, with art by Carmen Infantino and Henry Boltnoff. So I don't know if there's two stories in this one. I'll find out eventually. This one has the Top, and Flash is chasing the Top in one panel. He says, "I'm not going to tangle with you, Flash, till I'm good and ready." And then he clicks like he like pulls the a grenade, you know, pulls the pin. And then you hear blam, and the middle panel flashes shock from the blast. And then you see Flash as an old man with the gray beard, and it says, "Now I'm ready," as the top shows him his fist. And then it says, "A Flash's Rogues Gallery thriller featuring the top." So he must have been doing the secondary story. So that's the top. So the next one is an 80-page giant. It's 160. Reprints Flash 107, 113 through 114, 127, all Flash number 32. And I think that's it. And Adventure Comics 123, okay. And this one has some great writers, John Broom, Robert Kaniger, and Don Carmon. And this one is a really nice copy. It's a square bound. The square bound is all intact. The cover looks great. The back cover, it does have a date stamp on the front that says February 9th, 1966. And it says, "The Cream of Clock collection of stories featuring the Flash greatest super speed rivals." So this one says, "A mystery speedster beats his Flash running backwards in the amazing race against time." I remember buying the original issue of that. "A super speed spectacular starring Kid Flash, the fastest boy on Earth." Two classics from the golden age of comics. One is the original Flash in Fast and Furious fight against the Fiddler. And then we have a Johnny Quick golden age story and his magic speed formula in the adventure of the Antelope Boy. So that's really cool. We have Flash 163. And that one has Flash on the cover, and he's saying, "Stop, don't pass up this issue. My life depends on it." That was also maybe a very fine copy. It just looks really nice. We got 164. This one has a policeman arresting Flash on the cover. And it says, "Keep moving, Flash. We're taking you in for your own good." And then you have a bunch of people yelling in the background, "Hand that Flash Fink over to us. We'll take care of him." And then a police officer saying, "Keep back. Let the law handle this." Public hero one day, public menace the next. Flash, vandal of Central City. Maybe he spray painted the whole town. I don't know. Another brilliant cover with two of my favorite rogues. It's got my favorite rogue in it. You can guess who that is. 166. 166 has a Marv Wolfman in the letter column, by the way, and also Steve Lealola. So they actually have letters in there. That's pretty cool, huh? This one has Captain Cold and Heatwave on the cover, and they're basically saying, "Look who's hobbling our way." Flash is on crutches with a broken leg, and Heatwave says, "Here's where we end our hot and cold war against the Flash. Captain Cold and Heatwave, the coolest and hottest team of villains in comics." Next up, we have Flash 168, which has Green Lantern on the cover, and it says, "Green Lantern, don't run out on me. Without you, I'm helpless against the super-armed crooks." And it's got, like, some futuristic crooks shooting laser blasts at Flash. And it looks like Green Lantern's running away. We have another 80-page giant on 169. This one says, "A choice of collections of the Scarlet Speedster's most treacherous traps and deadly dooms." It has him encased in solid air, transformed into a puppet, blasted by an atom-powered trident, target of a magnetic bullet, and gripped by a bola top. Interesting. We then go, I bought Flash 171, and this is it has Versus Dr. Light in here. And a Mark Evanier and Kerry Bates in the letter column. That's a pretty big deal because Kerry Bates is a huge contributor. And we all know that how big Mark Evanier is. He works with Sergio a lot. And he also did a lot of comics like DNA Agents and all that stuff from Eclipse Comics. He did a lot of work there. And he's contributed to a lot of other works as well. And this one says, midday, busy corner in Central City, the Flash lies dead, unburied, unmourned. And it has a kid walking his dog, and he's whistling as he steps over the Flash. Interesting. So we then get to Flash 172, and this has Gorilla Grodd on the cover. Grodd puts the squeeze on Flash. It looks like he's just holding up Flash's costume, like Barry's not even in there. And he says, if you're looking for the Flash on this cover, forget it. This uniform is all that's left of him. This cover is one of my favorites. They've redone it several times. This is Flash 174. And the logo is written Flash, all like there. And it has like Heat Wave in the middle of the A. And on the top of the logo, it has Mirror Master, Captain Boomerang, the top, Pied Piper, and Captain Cold. Stupendous Triumph of the Six Supervillains. And it has them overneath the shadow of the Flash as he's lying on the ground. The next one is 177, and it has Flash with a huge brain. And I've seen this before because there's one Green Lantern that's really expensive that has the Flash with this big brain in it. And I'm wanting to pull the plug, but it's so damn expensive, I've been very cautious. Because the copy that the shop has is very fine, so that makes it even worse. But Flash is saying, what's wrong with these people? They think they never saw the Flash before, but they never saw him with that big brain, that's for sure. And that's Gardner Fox and Russ Andrew. And we got 179. And this one says the Flash visits DC Comics. That's pretty interesting. And we have Kerry Bates writing it with Ross Andrew. Fact or fiction, you be the judge. And it's got a criminal clutching Flash as a boy is reading the same comic that it's in. We have Flash 210. Let's see if there's anything special on that one. Oh, this is a lot of reprints. It's got an Elongated Man story. And on there, it's got a robot that shows the assassination of Abraham Lincoln in the future. And it's the robot saying, extra, President Abraham Lincoln has been assassinated. And Flash is walking there and he said, impossible, this is the year 2971. An interesting fact on this cover is there is Adam Strange flying in the background. And I don't know if it's just because there's a reprint story in there or what. We got Flash 212, which is an Elongated Man backup again. And it has a kid watching TV and the Flash getting sucked into the TV. And it says, the Flash in Cartoonland. And the boy that's watching it is dressed up as a cowboy. And he says, oh wow, Flash is going to appear live on my favorite TV cartoon show. And it says, plus a Flash classic, Share of the Headline Huntress. So I wonder if that's the Golden Age Huntress, which was a villain. We then have Flash 213. It says, don't miss the double special issue. How could this villain force two friends to fight like bitter enemies? And it looks like it's Vandal Savage. And it says, what part did the legendary Justice Society play in this strange drama? And it has Flash fighting Jay Garrick. And it has the Justice Society of America featuring Wonder Woman, Hawkman, Dr. Midnight, and Alan Scott, Green Lantern. Vengeance of the Immortal Villain. And then we got 215, which is the death of an immortal. It says, you savage, why did you have to kill him to get at me? Death of an Immortal, a Showcase Flash classic, Man Who Broke the Barrier, so it also has a reprint. And then I'll save the rest for next episode, but there was one issue of Detective I bought. This one is in VG for sure because of the spine. It's got several creases. It is a 10-cent issue. It's Detective 293. Batman and Robin become prisoners of the Dark World, and it has Batman with a bunch of aliens around. Batman and Robin with a bunch of aliens around them. It says, "That de-energizer gun is sapping our strength. We may never be able to return to our own dimension." And that is everything for Mike's Collector's Corner in this episode, and now we will get to Mike M's Weekly Reads. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Mike M's Weekly Reads. I was listening to a comic spotlight, preview spotlight on John Mayo feed, and one of the listeners. So the preview spotlight is a place where everybody could submit like what they're excited about in previews, and then John puts them all together and releases it. And there was an interesting one of Milk and Cheese. Somebody went to the Dark Horse section, I believe, and said there's, you know, some glasses for Milk and Cheese in a lunchbox, and, you know, how he enjoyed the humor and all that stuff. I think it's even Dorkin. I've never read it personally. But it got me to thinking about, for some reason, that triggered a thought in my head about one of the comic shops I used to go to, because one of the guys there, that's all he could talk about. He actually worked there sometimes. So I started thinking about comic shops and all that stuff, and I wanted to talk about, like, how all this evolved for me. I've kind of briefly talked about it, but I just want to go from shop to shop. And the way this evolved for me is the first stage was, you know, didn't have much money. My dad would take me to the dump, the garbage dump, yeah. And drugstores used to throw away a lot of comic books with the covers ripped off. And that's kind of how I got into comics, and I got hardcore into them. As a matter of fact, in kindergarten, I got, like, some kind of award because I used to take a lot of these to the class, and kids were learning to read from the comic books, so they were like, wow, you know, he's bringing things that kids are interested in and they're learning to read. So I got like a little award or whatever, but I would always do that. So my dad got me hooked as far as reading all kinds of different comics and just getting her. Initially, when I was like 4 or 5, I didn't even read them. I looked at the pictures, and then when I was more like 5, I started reading them, and I didn't understand all the words, but I started reading them, and from there, I just fell in love with the medium. I mean, that was like one of the things I always wanted to do, and after that, then when I would have spare change from earning allowance or whatever, it became the drugstore or Alsup's, which they were, you know, it was like a 7-Eleven kind of thing. And I preferred the drugstore because they had a huge spinner rack. The 7-Eleven kind of, or Alsup's had like, you know, just a little magazine rack with like, I don't know, like 35 comics they could store in it. With the spinner rack had like all kinds of different comics. And you'd always be able to tell because people would bend them. Like, they'd always have that crease over the wire where people bend them to see what is in the back. So, shopped at that drugstore for a long, long, long time. And eventually, when I got a little older, I found out when the day was when they restocked those. And that's when I started, like, not just getting any random book. And I'd usually pick books by the cover or how thick I think it was or how much I could get. And then once I found out, like, that these came out regularly and I wasn't so worried about the... I started to get, like, wow, these numbers mean something, you know? I'd like to get a run of this stuff. And I started getting, like... a lot of different comics, and I started to say, okay, next month I want to try to come back and see if I can get the next issue, and that didn't always work out. But then one day after, sometime in middle school, I went to a friend's house and saw these long boxes, and I was like, wow, comic boxes. And I've told this story before, and I saw things like Marvel Fanfare and all kinds of stuff that I had just never seen before at the spinner rack. And I'm like, where did you get these? And he said, oh, it's a comic shop. It's a bookstore / comic stop. And I said, there's such thing as a comic shop? So my first comic shop was Don's Paperback Books, and it was a paperback book exchange, but he also ordered comic books there. And so he used to have like a huge rack of like all the new comics that came out, and then he would have a table set up, and underneath that table, and it would have like back issues. And I didn't know like back issues even existed. So like when I started going to Don's Paperback Book, and this place is still there, Don I used to know, but his daughter, I believe, has taken over the store. And I still get emails like there's these warehouse sales. I sometimes visit them there with my father-in-law. You know, he'll go change some books, and I'll go visit that store again just to go down memory lane. And he has a few long boxes left, and I'll go through them and pick up a few issues of old issues. But that was like my first exposure, and that's when I started realizing I could collect back issues, because one of the first things I ever bought was a full run of the Champions, and it took me a while to get it because, you know, back then back issues were cheap, but, you know, I didn't have all that much allowance and stuff, so I'd be real strategic with what I was buying. And then from Don's Paperback Books, I then discovered a store called Tall Tales. And that store is still around in Albuquerque, New Mexico. And there I had a pull box. I mean, I went from a place where I'd go occasionally to the comic shop whenever I could get a ride to a place where I could pull my books and had a subscription service. And I stayed with that store for a long, long time. And there was this guy named Dave, and he was kind of like a hippie guy. And he had long beard. And I remember distinctively he had like a huge fingernail. I think he snorted cocaine out of it. I don't know what he did with that fingernail, but it was huge. And then he was such a nice guy. When he was there, and I had my pull list, I'd always get everything that I asked for. And then this guy came, his name was Jeff, and I don't know what his last name is, but somehow he came in the store and eventually took over the store. I don't know what happened, like, financially with Dave's situation, but Dave got pushed to the side, Jeff took over, and this is around the time that, you know, books started getting pretty doggone hot, you know, like, but it wasn't the speculator market yet, you know, that took a while, that was in the 90s, but there were still books, and I would always miss a few books when he took over, and it was always books that, like, he was selling out of, and I knew I couldn't get there, like, but every 2 weeks or maybe 3 weeks, and I know he would sell my copies that I had on my pull list to other people, and I got frustrated. So I did this all through high school, and then got to college, and when that college came, I was like, man, I need to find another store. And there was this place on Gibson in Albuquerque, New Mexico called Doc's News. It was an unusual store. It had porn, and it had comics in the front. So, like, you have porn, and you have comics. So I was like, this store seems cool. And I remember the guy, I don't remember his name, but he had like long hair and he was like a rocker guy, really cool guy. Always got my books. And this was around the time that indie started to kind of explode. And I wanted to get, you know, everything that was indies out. I remember getting Malibu there and Triumphant comics that had the numbering and Valiant and all kinds of different ex-mutants from Malibu and Protectors, and he stocked everything pretty good. And that's where the Milk and Cheese guys was there. He wasn't the rocker, but there was another guy that worked there occasionally that just loved Milk and Cheese. And that's where I started to really, you know, get a lot of DC, of course, and also get a lot of independent stuff. And I thought it was fantastic. And that's where, like, I exploded in the independent world. Before that, it was very little independent. I mean, there was, like, Eclipse, you know, which was the 2001 stuff. I collected Nemesis and Judge Dredd and... Or they weren't even called Eclipse, sorry. They were called Eagle Comics, and what they would do is print the UK sci-fi stuff here. And, you know, that was at Don's Paperback Book Exchange. So it took a while for me to get into indies, because when I was at Tall Tales, I didn't get too many indies. It was all Marvel and DC. And then in Doc's News in my college years, I started getting a lot of independents. I even explored, like, XXX comics. I remember getting Ramba, which was an Eros publication at the time. But there was a lot of different comics I was exploring. And eventually that store just... I don't know if they were going bankrupt or what, but I stayed there as long as I could, and they eventually had to go back to Tall Tales. But before I left... the state, and then when I came to Colorado, what's the first store I went there? Oh, it was called Gotham City. I remember that was my first store, and they didn't last for a while. And then I jumped from Gotham City, and this was around the time that Acclaim had Valiant. I remember, and I had a pull box there, and he was pretty good with my pull box, except towards the very end, you know. He missed my Unity 3000. I don't know if it's because of shipping or whatever, but my last issue of Shadow Man and last issue of Our Marines, you know, all those expensive issues. But he eventually sold his store, and it became more card-oriented, and I'm like, oh, no. I jumped really briefly to a mall store, and that store went under, but didn't have a pull box there very, very long. It was actually, there was a store before that when I first moved here, and I don't even remember what it was called, but I remember it was by a grocery store. So then we moved to, like, that mall store. Don't remember if it was called, like, Heroes and Dragons or whatever, but had a pull box there. I liked the owner. I liked the way I got my books. I liked the way I pre-ordered. They eventually lost. I guess mall stores are really hard to keep just because the rent is so doggone high. And jumped to Mile High Comics, but it wasn't like Mile High in Denver / Boulder. It was like an extension Mile High store. It was very weird, and that's where it was like DCBS, where you, like, pre-order, you pay up front, and you got this, like, shipping list for your pull box, and then you would get your books as they came in. And I kind of like that. Like, I was almost, like, guaranteed to get whatever I ordered, and it was a good system until the guy decided to close down his store. And he said, but I'll continue to deliver comics from my house. And I got shafted out of $100, and I was pissed. And that's when I found Ed's Cards and Comics, and been with him ever since. I only get, like, DC there now, but I still support his store, and I get a lot of back issues from him. I like it's the best store in Colorado Springs for back issues. He's got a lot of good deals. He always cuts me in on some really good deals, and I like shopping there. But at that store, I got a 25% discount, and then I discovered podcasting, I guess roughly around 2005, 2004. Before I started podcasting, I started listening to Derek Coward and Comic Geek Speak, and I think there was a Fanboy Radio, not iFanboy, but Fanboy Radio, which was actually a radio show, but it was recorded as a podcast. And I started hearing about this DCBS, and I started hearing about this discounts, and I was like, man, those are some steep discounts. And that's when I started migrating stuff over, and I started with the indies, and then I started with other things. And DCBS is kind of like gives me reason that I am able to get as many books as I'm able to get. If it wasn't for DCBS, my pull list would not be 250 comics a month. It would be more like 100 and some comics a month. Because they give such steep discounts, they can't even put it in their ad in the comic books. They even say that. But love DCBS. I've always had great customer service. I love it. So I get 80% of my comics there, 20% of my comics at the comic shop because I'm kind of loyal to that shop. And then most of my back issues from there or mycomicshop.com, and I've been there ever since. So after Mile High, that's where I went. And that's the history of the comic shops. And that led me to think about, well, actually a post on Facebook about this huge collection that was purchased recently by Jesse James. He's a comic shop owner, so it's very different than me collecting comics or Bob Retall collecting comics. This guy is a shop. He sells comics for a living. He's like if Chuck Rozowski from Mile High Comics or one of those guys from My Comic Shop bought this collection. And this collection had comics since 1959 in it. Every Marvel comic since 1962 except for Captain America and Ghost Rider, from what I understand, and every DC comic since 1959. And for those of you who've been listening to me for a while, one of my goals, and I'm pretty doggone close, at least on main titles. I've even exceeded that goal because with Flash and Batman and Justice League, I've gone way beyond. But my goal was to have every DC comic since 1973, because that's when I got into comics hardcore. And I'm pretty much there, except for with the exception of some war comics and mystery comics and House of Mystery, House of Secrets, that kind of thing. But I've gone more deeper into the 60s and 50s because I just have this like random collecting thing. Like, I can't stay focused on one thing. I have these urges to try different things and get into other things, and I lose my focus. But someone posted, "Oh, you have a new rival." You know, as far as the collection goes, well, I don't consider that a rival because this guy's a comic shop owner, which is a different philosophy. For one thing, he's not a collector. He's going to flip these. As a matter of fact, I think he already has an offer on the collection. He's going to like double his money. And you know how shop owners buy stuff. They buy stuff at really low discounts and then are able to sell them at what they're worth, like closer to Overstreet. But at least for the books that are like 1970 prior and then keys after that. And then they throw all the other stuff in dollar bins. But the interesting thing is they say, oh, you have a new rival. And I'm not in a competition with anybody. I'm not out to beat anybody's collection or say I have a bigger collection. If you have a bigger collection, that's great. I mean, I encourage people to collect comics and do that stuff. I do it because I love to read comics. First of all, I love to read the comics. I mean, it gives me a sense of peace. I love the story. It's a decompression from work. It relaxes me. And secondary, I love to collect. I used to do toys and comics, but I've slim that down to just comics. I still get some statues. And from time to time, I get Wonder Woman toys just because I love Wonder Woman a lot. But so like if there's these large collections, like there's the Breitel collection, who it's the biggest collection recorded in with the Guinness Book of World Records, and he did a lot of work to get there. I'm too lazy to do that. I will never do that. Plus, I have this like if you want to do that, you kind of have to store books like Bob does, which is not in order and not merged, and that would drive like the little part of OCD that I have. It would drive me crazy because if I want to go to issue 15, I have to look up the box, but maybe 16's in another box, and now they're like, why are they apart from each other? I freak out. But this story became a really long story. But anyway, I am not in competition with anybody. I think the fact that he bought the collection is amazing. What I'm more interested in is not how the comic buyer bought the collection, but I'm more interested in the guy that sold it. Because it gets me thinking, like, I don't want to ever sell my collection, but the sad fact of the matter is I'm going to die. Life isn't forever. I wish it was. And, I can't leave Barb to sell it all, so I'm going to have to get rid of it at some point, but I'm not ready to do that yet. And I'm interested in why this guy sold this collection. Like, it's an amazing collection. Did he sell it because he was in a similar predicament, or he could have lost interest in it? He could have said, screw this, I'm going digital, or I just want to read digital. And by the way, I got nothing against digital. Everybody picks on me, but I just don't like it. It's not for me. I think digital is amazing because digital is on demand. Like, if it wasn't for my collectability thing, the second part, and I just wanted to read. Well, there's two things. I don't like to read on a tablet because I look at a computer screen all day, and it starts computer screens or tablets, they make me associate things with work. So that already changes my reading experience because it's not as relaxing. So I like paper more. And then like I said, I like to collect it. I could just go look at my runs. I could physically touch it. I could smell it. It's just a different experience. And I have friends that like Daryl who loves digital, and digital makes a lot more sense because digital only grows space on hardware. So you can buy more hardware to put your comics on. And it's even better if it's somebody else's hardware, like Comixology, and then you go read it. And the other thing is, you don't buy all these books up front. You buy them when you're ready. And you can read them later. Like if you're only in the mood for Green Lantern, well, go read it. I mean, you just go buy what you want. You don't have to pre-order or do any of that stuff. So it's got a lot of advantages. I even forgot what the hell I was talking about because. But oh yeah, the collection. I would just like to know more like me and Breitel had a little chat on Facebook about that. Different philosophies. He'll probably never sell his in his lifetime, but I think I will. And it's just the burden of such a big collection. It's I got 50 above 50,000 comic books, and that doesn't include the extra 30 or so long boxes I haven't inventoried yet. And then I have a huge trade collection and hardcover collection, and that doesn't. For a while there, I was buying every DC toy that ever came out. If it was a DC Direct, I owned it. So I have all those, and it's just a lot of stuff. I mean, it really is. But I love it all. And like I don't want to ever part with it because every book means something to me, even the bad stuff, because it's like historic, it's like history. It's amazing. But yeah, so this Jesse James guy bought that collection. I wonder how much it went for. I would be really curious to see what that is and the condition that it was in. But this totaled, just for those, it says 57,063 issues. So I'm already kind of like there, but that didn't include variants and such or duplicates. And it didn't include indies, which, you know, my number includes a lot of indies, especially since I discovered them. But that's what I would like to know about this collection, is why somebody sold it. And it's sad too, because I see this at the comic shop all the time, is like the kids will bring in their father's collection, and it's an amazing collection, and I start buying them because they're amazing books. And but the sad part of it is they belong to somebody who's no longer around or defaulted on their storage unit. And you know that that these people just love their comic books. And it's just sad that they have to part with them. That's enough of that. And let's get into Mike M's Weekly Reads. So, this week was for 6/27/2016 to July 3rd, right before the holiday. And it must have been a geek brunch week, because there was a lot of indies. Usually that's the week. And what you'll see is a weird trend in a couple of weeks, where I was so hooked into Marvel, the mainstream stuff, and I didn't want to read it indie. I'm a mood reader. I'm not a keep caught up reader. I read things when I'm in the mood to try to maximize my enjoyment, because when you're in the mood for something, it helps you absorb that book because you want to read it, rather than you feel like you have to read it to keep caught up. That changes your mood. At least that's my philosophy. It's like if you were going to school and you were forced to read a textbook, you don't enjoy it as much as if you pulled out a novel for a class and you got to choose it and read it for that. But this week had a lot of, a really good distribution. It was 30 comics, one from Titan, one from Oni, six from Marvel, nine from Image, four from IDW, three from Dynamite, one from DC, three from Dark Horse, one from Archie, and one from 4-5 Media. Only one DC. That's amazing. But the ratings, again, is the Netflix ratings. Five, I love it. Four, really like it. Three, I like it. Two, did not like it. One, hated it. So starting at the bottom, we had three out of fives. This was Godzilla Oblivion. And this had to do with a group that opened a portal to another dimension, like another Earth, where Godzilla existed, and then accidentally brought Godzilla and the other monsters back to their Earth, and they're having to deal with it. And all the monsters were over to the clean Earth, and all these characters are having to learn to cope with it. So their scientific invention turned into their worst nightmare. And that's what that was about. Godzilla books are always, I enjoy to read them from time to time from IDW, but they don't always, rock my world. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they just feel like the right time to read, and I enjoy them, but I don't really enjoy them. We had an Image book next, on a 3 out of 5, which was Black Road, number one, and this is a mercenary that's escorting a priest through this Black Road area. It's kind of all set up. Nothing really there that it was well written, but nothing there that really rocked my world. It was a good story. Want to see where it goes. Need to get on that, by the way. The other one that was 3 out of 5 was Wynona Earp. And It's she has her TV show. I think that's why I wanted to read this. She's working with an agency to, you know, find monsters and such. So it's kind of like working with a DEO group of Supergirl or something to track down superhumans, but in this time to find monsters. Then we get into the 4 out of 5s. This book really changed a lot for me, and I like it a lot more. It's discipline, number 2 through 4, and it's a weird sex alien book. It's a sex alien war, and testifies, and again, when she finds out that she's turning into like this like reptilian alien, it's weird. She has sex with this guy, and then she starts to absorb it, but you don't know if she was evolving herself, and that's why they targeted her, or what. But she comes home, and she actually tries to rape her husband. It's very weird. And her friend, one of her best friends, turns to the opposing side, which is the side that's actually fighting with against her and the guy that kind of recruited her. So it got really interesting. I need to finish that, but I read 2 through 4. That's an Image book. I thought it was excellent. On the first issue we talked about on Geek Brunch, and I was like, man, the artist kind of drew her bald in a couple of spots, and I didn't like the way the freckles were drawn. But I liked the story. It was very weird and compelling, even though I didn't understand everything that was in it. Found out that the artist didn't just draw that weird, it was the lighting. Like, it was like meant to be a dark room, and it was just the light that was coming from outside the window that was reflecting that made her look like she was losing her hair. But the art was fine in the rest of these books. So Aliens Defiance 1 through 2. This is Brian Wood's story about the Marines assisting rogue drones to take out aliens, and these drones are like what we saw in the movie Aliens, the second one. We got Micronauts number 2. This team is the one that went to that satellite where they were trying to get like a cure for something, like a hospital satellite, and they actually got betrayed, and it was an actual full-blown war they got involved with. This is interesting. It's an interesting exploration because it's not the Micronauts that's Marvel. It's more truly based on the toys that were Micronauts, not how Marvel took the toys and generated their own fiction. It's really more rooted in the toys themselves. And I find that fascinating because I did own a couple of the toys. And the interesting thing about the Micronauts is I must have trashed them because I only have like heads and stuff left. And that's very unusual for me because I usually kept all my toys out of package in pristine condition, like my Star Wars stuff, my superpowers, my Marvel superhero stuff, my Big Jim's pack, which I still have and I love. The next one is Jughead, number 4, from Archie. He's back in school after a suspension, and he tried to convince his friends that the principal wasn't all he appeared to be, that he was evil and he was there to make people bad, like to work as like kind of like soldiers or drones for him. Archie has been really, really good since it came back. It's not as lighthearted and fun though. It's a different tone. But what I really love about them doing this modernization of it is you get the main story, which is contemporary. And then you get like a golden age story. And I think that's fascinating because to see like the first appearance of some of these characters is phenomenal. And they're written really well. Like Archie Golden Age is fantastic. Next one is Circuit Breaker number 1. It's a Japan war between human and robot start. And Circuit Breaker is a robot that looks like a human. And she's caught up in it. Really good story. Kyle Baker art. I liked it a lot. The next one comes from Titan Comics. It's Norman number one. It's an orphan serial killer tries to recruit a female orphan who is also like batshit crazy. And they keep showing this teacher that's just frustrated, and she's absolutely hilarious. I really liked it. It's drawn like in a really like animated, cartoony style, but it really works for this. So even though it's about a serial killer, it's kind of like a black comedy. You got Miss Fury number 1 through 3. Really enjoyed this character from Dynamite. This is a 1940s female hero in World War II, when all the men are away. And it has beautiful artwork by Jonathan Lau, who I think is Dynamite's like best artistic talent. I love when he draws books. And really became infatuated with Miss Fury. A matter of fact, in this last previews, IDW is printing out some Golden Age, like a Golden Age book of Miss Fury that I'm picking up, and also the newspaper version of it. So I'm kind of really fascinated with the character. Just recently got a Miss Fury commission from Andrew P. Poy. Next is Self Storage number 4, which is this is the one about the storage unit with the zombie. And this story is probably 451, in my opinion's best story of the few that they have out. This is a little boy actually finds his parents, and then the storage unit is going to hell in a handbasket. That boy's parents actually become zombies, and the boy does as well, and things become a disaster because the one guy that finds the zombie isn't causing all the issues. It's the guy who owns the storage unit. First he's turned into a zombie, and then the two friends that bid against him essentially turn the situation into something very, very bad. And that's how this innocent family gets killed, because they're playing ridiculous games, shooting up a zombie as target practice, which is the zombie that used to own the place. But I really enjoy the storytelling and Self-Storage. Really good story. Captain America number 2. This one was a 4 out of 5, but it's kind of a disappointment because they rushed to tell us what the outcome of the last one. And issue number 1, if you remember, they did Hail Hydra and Captain America was bad. They didn't let us sit on that for a long time. Hail Hydra was revealed to be the Red Skull and Kubik. And that's what's actually making Cap do what he's doing. And there's also more to the story, as you've been those who have been reading it will see. Uncanny X-Men number 3 through 6. That was above Captain America. This was the death of an Inhuman's grandfather. And they're on the trail of the Red Skull. They actually run into Gambit. Wrecker invades the mansion, which is turned to an Avengers fantasy cap. That's kind of weird. Synapse with the Inhumans and Adalyn and Red Skull under their noses at the mansion. This isn't even Uncanny X-Men. I typed it wrong. It's Uncanny Avengers. See what they did right there? They threw me off. But this is the Avengers book that is my favorite. My least favorite, which is surprising, is the all-new, all-different Avengers, which on paper it should be my favorite, but it just not. It's just surface. There's no characterization on there. It's a really flat book for me. The next one is Dark Knight, A True Batman Story by Paul Dini's Beating. It's autobiographical. It is a brutal story. And I think the first part of the story read a lot more better for me because it was more about what his life and stuff and how he got where he was going. And then he got beaten up. And then it got just depressing. One thing you learn about a lot of comic creators is life isn't all sunshine and I don't know what the term is, but the grass isn't greener on the other side. You know, people always wonder what it would be like to write comics and create stuff like animated Batman and all that stuff. But these people sometimes are really, really depressed, and it's kind of sad. Very interesting hardcover book that was released from Vertigo. Next one up is an Oni book, Heartthrob number one. A woman basically has heart flavor and gets a replacement and falls in love with the donor ghost. So it's like she got a replacement heart. That heart, she actually can see the donor where nobody else could see her, and she falls in love with them. So that is the interesting thing about that story. Next one up is Department H number 2 from Dark Horse Comics, Matt Kent. This is trying to find the main character is on a mission to find who murdered her father, and she's talking with her brother to try to figure out how that happened. She confronts her brother. They both have to investigate under, you know, like what caused the loss of power while they were both aboard. And the Leviathan seems to take the brother and the sister at the end of this one. Haven't read the next one. Really need to, while I still have it all fresh in my head. The last 4 out of 5 is from Image Comics, Midnight of the Soul. Okay, let me tell you that I love Howard Chaykin. Okay, to me, there is no bad Howard Chaykin. There is just good Howard Chaykin. I just love Howard Chaykin. And this is a 1950 former GI, Joel Breakstone. He was in Auschwitz, and he's really seriously damaged goods. He hasn't been sober for 5 years, and he's back in the States and kind of with a girlfriend who's with somebody else. Like, she's a prostitute. It's very weird. She's there with her brother. And I don't know, it's just such a weird book, but it's fascinating. And I'd highly recommend it, especially if you're a Howard Chaykin fan or even a World War II buff. You might enjoy this. Getting to the 5 out of 5s, there were only 4, but only 2 titles. 5 out of 5, Ghost Rider number 1, and this is the first volume. It's the first series that continued from Marvel Spotlight, and if you know, you know, for my posts, I just recently found Marvel Spotlight number 5, which only leads me to track down one more Ghost Rider issue, and then I have all the Ghost Riders from Marvel Spotlight. I almost have a full run of Marvel Spotlight. And then I'm working on getting a full run of Ghost Rider, and I'll be happy. Volume 1, I still have to do the other volumes. I have the Ghost Driver stuff. And I have a little bit of the Danny Ketch stuff, but the one thing you'll know in my history of books is if anything drops, it's usually Marvel. I don't know why that is, because Marvel puts out a lot of quality books, but the ones that I have kept getting, like that I always usually get, are Daredevil, Captain America, Fantastic Four, and maybe a few others. But Black Panther for sure, if he has a book out. So, yeah, it's Ghost Rider trying to save a girlfriend and gets shot by police. Like and then there's another stuntman, because Johnny Blaze is now in the hospital. Another stuntman tries to take his job to make a jump that he was supposed to be scheduled to do, and he actually dies. And it's also the first Damien Hellstrom. So, I've always been fascinated with the Son of Satan, and he's investigating a possession. We have Power Lines 1 through 3. This is an absolutely fascinating story. This is from Image Comics. It is also a lot of statement on, you know, political unrest and racial tension and all that stuff, because it involves a black kid and a white woman, and the tension between the two and their respective territories, and they both get powers. They both get abilities to do things. One can like run really fast. One has flight and superpowers, and they're having to deal with all this. And it's an amazing story. Jimmy Robinson is an amazing creator. He does the writing, he does the story, he does everything. And I encourage you to do. He also does Bomb Queen and Five Weapons, and there's so many other books that he's done. And he always does a quality job. He's very diverse. He just needs a break. He's like one of those guys that just needs to have that lightning in a bottle, and then once he has that hit, people will realize what a great creator he is, because he really needs to be selling more books than he is, because he's phenomenal. So having said that, I hope you enjoyed this trip down memory lane and Mike M's Weekly Reads. Again, it was a very diverse set of comics, a total of 30, and that ends it. You can reach me at mike@comicbooknoise.com. You can send Twitter at Mike Myers Brunch. You can find this podcast at geekbrunchpodcast.com. You can leave email there, or at Facebook if you search for Geek Brunch Podcast. You can leave feedback on the episode thread there. I also post on the Taylor Network as well. You can leave feedback there if you like, because that's probably the biggest group that might listen to this show. And just a few shout-outs. I listened to the last Valiant Central with Joshua, and they got Ivar's Long Box going again, where they're reviewing books in chronological order. Really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed the discussion and emails at the end. Just a shout out for Paul, Martin, and Joshua. That was a great episode. And having said that, I will talk to you later. Leave an iTunes review if you get a chance. Leave one for other people. They appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again later. Bye.